But now it's time for our final guest, Matthijs Verste. Hi, Matthijs.
Hi.
So I'm going to throw you in at the deep end with a biggie. What's your number one unsolved issue in the methods adopted by HTA agencies?
That question could have gone many ways when you said, what's your number one issue? But I gladly meant particularly to nice HTA methods. So, yeah. So something I've been discussing with people for a couple of years now is that if you look at where the research effort is being focused, then there has been a very large effort by academia, by HTA agencies, by industry on developing those HTA methods for better estimations of either costs or, sorry, I have this thing that I have a response thing that gives a thumbs up, but that tries to estimate, you know, more precisely better costs that are incurred, effects that are estimated. So we have a lot of attention on extrapolating survival, and rightly so, because it's complicated. There's a lot of attention for trying to better estimate utility values in different ways. And there's a whole bunch of literature targeting uncertainty. And that has been very beneficial. And it also means that the quality of the incremental cost effectiveness ratios that we get nowadays is much higher than perhaps a couple of years when there was much more variation in how models that were being submitted handled all these elements. But the problem is you get incremental cost effectiveness ratios out of all these models, and then you have to do something with those, right? You have to compare them, perhaps with a threshold or with something else. So if you were to ask me what is the number one issue, like you did, it's that the amount of energy we have put in getting more precise cost effectiveness ratios has not been matched at all by better ideas on what to compare them with, i.e. thresholds, and what those thresholds mean and what they do. And if I just practically think about how it was when I was at Erasmus University before, that the amount of colleagues and the amount of funding that is available for performing cost effectiveness analysis is a manifold of what is available for questions related to appropriate threshold setting. And I think there are many ways to go about it, this. I mean, if you look at a fixed budget like you would have in England, then probably your first question is, what's the size of the healthcare budget, right? That's the first question you want to address before you talk about any threshold. You want to ask yourself the question, what should be the size of the healthcare budget? And that kind of ties with the question, what the objective is of your policy. Is your objective to maximize health, overall health in a country? Or do you want to perhaps reduce health inequalities? Because if you want to reduce health inequalities, it could very well be that you might want to kind of reduce the healthcare budget and put it in all sorts of different policies. I don't know, school lunches, poverty reduction interventions. So that's probably question number one that I would guess in HTA methods, before we even get to HTA methods, we need to have a budget. Now, let's just assume we have that budget. Somebody, we voted, we have a democratically elected government, and then collectively they represent the will of the people and they set a budget for health. Let's say that's the way it works. Then there's the question, what is the cost of effectiveness threshold within that budget? And so what we're doing now, as you very well know, and the people who listen know as well, we have a cost effectiveness ratio of a new technology. And we kind of think that because we're in a fixed budget, when we let that enter the healthcare system, it's going to displace some other form of care. But we say we don't, and that's true. We don't really know which form of care is being displaced. So we're taking the marginal productivity of the healthcare system as a threshold. So we're asking ourselves the question, for the same amount of money that we have to pay for this new technology, how much health could we have gotten elsewhere in the healthcare system? Now, one of the assumptions there is that current care is cost effective, which may not be the case, and it's actually not likely to be the case. There might be many non-cost effective elements in healthcare. But also, it doesn't necessarily incentivize what I think should be one of the questions we want to answer, which is, which care do we want to displace? So one of the ideals I would have is that if we were, for example, to allow pharmaceutical companies to enter the basic benefit package or whatever, if they have a cost effectiveness threshold that beats something they are explicitly displacing, But I'm pretty sure that we're incentivizing them to do a lot of research and perhaps even trials in the efficacy and cost effectiveness of current care that's being delivered. So then that's a whole different concept of a threshold, right? You're no longer looking at marginal productivity. You're just trying to ask people, okay, if you want to get in this budget, you know, help us identify what should go out, and we'll allow you, as long as you're better than the comparator, we'll allow you to get in. And I think we need that because currently we're focusing all our research effort on HTA methods, cost effectiveness analysis on new drugs. We hardly do anything about the things that are already in the basic benefit package. Once I start thinking and talking, right? But hold that thought. But something completely different we could equally do is that now we take consecutive decisions, right? So somebody submits a dossier tonight and it gets evaluated compared to a threshold, and we say it is or it isn't part of the basic benefit package. What you could equally do is you have everyone submit it. At the end of the year, you make a list, you make a quality league table, you make a cost effectiveness league table, and you just pick the best ones and you leave out the ones that are at the bottom. Because now we're having health technologies compete with a threshold, but we want them to compete with each other. And we're losing out that part of competition. So I think competition is something that is obviously in general lacking. Otherwise, you wouldn't do cost effectiveness analysis in the first place. But if you want to get that competition back, perhaps competing with each other or with all technologies is a slightly preferable approach. So I guess, sorry, to your question.
No, it's great. It's a radical proposal. And I think we want radical proposals on the table. It conflicts somewhat, I think, with current priorities within NICE for more proportional processes, and the notion that processes are kind of simplified, shortened whenever possible. I guess my pushback to your proposal would be that it puts a greater demand on HTA agencies for evidence generation going forward. So that brings me, that kind of segues me into another question, which is, so in the future, looking to the future of HTA agencies, would you, broadly speaking, like them to have their scope and role extended beyond the kinds of decisions that are currently made?
So to first get back to your first point, I'm not necessarily sure whether or not it broadens the responsibilities of the HTA institution itself. I think it kind of incentivizes others to do this job for you. Because HTA agencies are not evaluating current care, you would like other people to do it, but there should be some benefit for them to do it, and that is that they can get in the basic benefit package. So I was hoping actually to divert that effort, but perhaps I was mistaken. Also, I'm aware that it's a radical proposal, but I think I just want to stress that we kind of need to think these things through, right? There are alternatives that might be better. And if we have the same amount of research effort on those elements, on thresholds, as we have on HTA methodology, then perhaps we come up with entirely different systems. Now, as to the latter question, whether or not the scope should be broadened, I think if I look at the Dutch Healthcare Institute, if from what I have seen for NICE, these institutes are relatively overburdened. And I'm not necessarily advocating that everything should be evaluated in cost effectiveness analysis and that these HTA people, the evaluators, should have more work. There is proportionality is always at play, but that could also mean that you kind of want to stop evaluating some of the smaller indications. So it could go many ways, right? If you want to free up that capacity, then perhaps you should start thinking about evaluating solely the ones that have a high budgetary impact. Now, alternatively, if you start working with reference models, which have a high upfront cost because you want to develop one type of model against which you evaluate all new, say, multiple myeloma, renal cell cancer drugs, then at least you don't have the effort to validate that particular model. Obviously, you have to maintain the model. But I think I just want to say there are other ways, and those need to be evaluated all the way up to the first question that I addressed: what should be the budget for healthcare and how does it align with our healthcare goals? And if they are about reducing inequalities, then I would think that healthcare budget perhaps even needs to be reduced somewhat for other social policies.
A fair point. So I think one of the ways in which HTA agencies at the moment are trying to tackle that kind of part of that efficiency challenge that I mentioned has been around collaboration, international collaboration. We've seen some initiatives around collaboration in HTA in Europe recently, and I know that the Netherlands is leading some programs for the development and implementation of new EU HTA regulations. So I'm interested in what your view is on these international collaborations among HTA agencies. Do you think they're going to be important over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, so I guess they were already important before they were formalized, right? So the collaborations might have been formalized and there might be EU regulation coming up. But something that has been somewhat of a minor concern is that HTA agencies look at each other and they kind of copy each other. And I think NICE has been pretty leading globally in this fashion. And on the one hand, it's nice because you want to have pharmaceutical companies and others who want to deal with these evaluatory institutions, that there's a sort of predictability of what they can expect, right? But I also kind of feel that there's a sort of a path dependency where people think, oh, we're all gonna walk to the right, and then everybody walks to the right, and that might not have been the best idea. So the questions we just addressed earlier about, you know, what should thresholds reflect? I think NICE has been pretty dominant in the idea that you have a fixed budget, and from within that fixed budget, you try to do optimal decision making. But many countries don't even have a fixed budget, but do have a threshold that represents the fixed budget. So in terms of collaboration, I think that's something that is desired, as long as there's competition amongst HTA agencies as well for what should be appropriate methods, because otherwise we're just going to copy the brightest child in the classroom, which often is NICE. Which is one of the, I might not necessarily agree with everything that Sweden is doing in their evaluatory program, but I really like that they're doing something that they want to do, which is different. And I'm talking about patient preferences, surely. So I'm in a collaboration now with Cadeth, NICE, the Dutch Healthcare Institute, and the US ICER Institute. That's about disease modeling, about the idea that you want to model treatment sequences. And I think sharing models, sharing insights is something that can strengthen the institutional capacities because you learn from the others. But there is a risk of path dependency. In terms of European collaboration, it is odd how many different regulations we have, and I doubt that they are actually a consequence of differing preferences between populations, and might well be differences in how policymakers address those preferences. So I would think uniformity would match preferences quite a bit, yes.
Yeah, that stands to reason. I think quite a few people in the audience, we've got some questions coming in around severity modifiers, which I've mentioned already. Do you think the developments in the use of severity modifiers across agencies fits the pattern that you were just describing? Do you see agencies following one another with the severity modifiers, and do you see that continuing to happen in the future?
Yeah, so I think to some extent that is the case. That I think the Netherlands and Norway were pretty early on with these type of severity modifiers. But if I explain to lay people, you know, people who work in healthcare, and I explain them cost effectiveness methods, I'm always really happy that I can communicate to them that it's not entirely utilitarian what we do, right? That we prioritize perhaps some groups over another, because nobody believes that one quality has equal value and weight for one person as it has for the other person. So I think in principle, it is very beneficial to have some sort of adjustment. I guess there are two main questions, and the one is the extent to which this should be a quantifiable approach rather than a deliberative approach. So is it something you talk about with a committee, or is it something that you want to measure? And I'm not really sure if that has been thought through by all the different HTA institutions. I mean, it looks really nice if you can measure it makes more sense, but sometimes I feel that it might be a bit too complicated. And the other thing is, does the severity modifier or whatever societal preference you put on these evaluation methods, whether or not it reflects the preferences of society. So if you look at the Netherlands, we have proportional shortfall, which means that if you lose a larger proportion of your future health, you get a higher cost effectiveness threshold. But if you're 80 and you're going to die within a year, you lose a large proportion of your future health. And if you are 30 and you die within a year, you also lose a large proportion of your future health. And then the argument in the Netherlands was, well, you know, if we don't do that, then you are discriminatory against age. You know, we don't want to have discriminatory measures. And if you prefer younger people over older people to treat them, that's not something you want. So those kind of things, once you quantify them, you get kind of stuck in whether or not you're making these ethical decisions, which in a contextualized deliberative process might be much more easy to explain to the public. So I think, yeah, you're right. There's the type of path dependency there that I described earlier, specifically to severity modifiers, even though I think I'm a fan of adjusting, you know, of having different decisions for different groups of people.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Matthijs.